Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rounding Third Sports. I'm your host, Steve, and let's get started. So today is the day, I guess this week is the week of the NFL draft. So I've given my mock drafts. We have looked at rumors, and today is the episode where we talk about the results. So we will actually talk about the NFL draft in the second half of today's podcast. We're going to give some historical facts about the first round this year. We're going to do some fun facts for the draft, as well as break down the actual picks themselves, see how I did on my mock draft, and I'll give my thoughts on some picks that were made. Were they good? Were they bad? Were they okay? Who's doing well in this draft? Again, in my opinion, we can debate this all we want, but this will be my opinion of how I feel like this has gone. But for the first half of this podcast today, I want to talk baseball. I want to talk Cincinnati Reds. I want to talk some statistics. I want to talk some May predictions. And I want to talk, of course, my standings update and playoffs update. So the first thing I wanted to talk about was a big feat for the Cincinnati Reds this week, where we had Joey Votto hit his 300th career home run. So there it is. Okay, I was looking for a number. I had seen this number and it didn't make sense because it wasn't correlating to this to the leader statistics. So Votto is the ninth active player with 300 home runs, and only the third Reds player to hit that feat after Johnny Bench and Frank Robinson. Okay, so that's one note for that. I'm going to try to pull up the active home run leaders. But while I'm doing that, I do want to go through. It prompted me to look up the Reds' historical stats. So who leads in different categories? And so, as I said, Votto is the third Reds player to hit 300 home runs. Bench holds the record there at 389, and Frank Robinson is at 324. So that puts the number one spot within range for Joey Votto. He's 89-90 from overtaking that number one spot. Career RBIs. While I've got this up, I want to look and see who holds these records and how close the next active player is. So RBIs, Bench also holds that record at 1,376. Votto is the active player that has the most, and he's at 982. So he's 400 roughly from that spot. We can look at all this. Triples, Bid McPhee holds that record at 188. So that's a trivia question right there for you. Who holds the Cincinnati Reds record for most triples in their career? And the answer is Bid McPhee, second baseman, 188 triples. And there's no active player in the top 25. of that stat. So overall hits, obviously Rose holds that record. With the Reds, he had 3,358. And Votto is the top active player at 1,931. So the next after Pete Rose. So Pete Rose again, 3,358. The next highest after him is Barry Larkin at 2,340. So over 100 less is the number two. Most at bats with the Reds, Pete Rose at 10,934. Dave Concepcion is second with 8,723. So that's 1,300. No, I'm sorry. That's 2,200 below. And Votto again is the highest active at 6,369. Let's see, most strikeouts. Joey Votto has the most strikeouts in Cincinnati Reds history at 1,375. For those of you that are listening to this that remember the days of Adam Dunn and what the struggle was there, the feast or famine, Adam Dunn is fourth on the all-time list at 1,212. So the two people between Votto and Dunn are Tony Perez and Johnny Bench. So fun fact there for you. Let's look at career average. So Mike Donlin, in 220 games with the Reds, has a 342 career average. And there's no active player in the top 25. And there's a lot of names I don't recognize. So that is the Reds' hitting records. Let's look at their pitching records. All-time wins. Epa Rixey. There's another trivia question for you there. Who holds the all-time win? Who's the all-time wins leader for the Cincinnati Reds? Epa Rixey, 179 wins. Joe Nuxall, for those wondering, number 9 with 130. And I'm not even going to look for an active player that's with the team because there is none. Johnny Cueto's on here at 92. So career ERA, Fred Tony holds that record at 218. Game started. Epa Rixey again with 357. Tom Brown is number 4 at 298. Career saves. All right, my guys that are listening to this that know me, they know this answer. And a lot of you might know this answer. The all-time saves leader for the Cincinnati Reds. That'd be mid-2000s, I believe, is when he was with the Reds. But it's Danny Graves at 182. So if you said that name before I told you, give yourself a pat on the back. Well done. Francisco Cordero is number 2 at 150. Aroldis Chapman is number 4 at 146. Raisel Iglesias was climbing the boards. He was number 6 at 106. So we're going to have to build that back up now as we don't have those guys anymore. Innings pitched. I'm guessing this is going to be Epa Rixey. Yeah, Epa Rixey at 2,890.2 innings pitched. Who gave up? Actually, I want to see who has. So we looked at the lowest ERA. Who has the highest ERA? Herm Wehmeyer at 525. And for anybody wondering, Homer Bailey is third on that list at 456. But who has given up the most home runs? That's what I want to know for the Reds. Bronson Arroyo has given up 275 home runs with his career with the Reds. And let's see who has the most strikeouts. Jim Maloney at 1,592 strikeouts. So there you have it. There's the Reds leaders in most of the stats. Transitioning over to current stats, let's look at right now what's going on this season. So Nick Castellanos has the most runs at 17. Votto is down pretty far at 9. The most hits is Winker, Jesse Winker at 30. Castellanos leads in home runs at 7. RBIs is Tyler Naquin at 19. Who has the most strikeouts? Looks like 23. Looks like it might be Jesse. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's 40. Suarez. Suarez is almost double the number two in most strikeouts this season. Suarez is also batting 130. So whatever happened there, Suarez has been ruined. And our stolen base leader right now, we don't really have one. We have a total of 5 stolen bases this season. 5? You're telling me that there is a Major League Baseball team whose most stolen bases is 2 by one player. And as a team, you have 5. That, wow. I know the game has changed a lot. You know, stolen bases aren't as big as they used to be. But, wow. That's pitiful. That really is pitiful. I'm trying to pull up the pitching stats now. Innings pitched, Wade Miley has 27. Miley also he leads in wins with 3. Tyler Malley leads in ERA at 1.75. So that's not very bad. Strikeouts, Tyler Malley also leads that in 36. Amir Garrett has a total of 2 saves. I mean, this is pitiful, guys. Our starting pitchers have a combined 8 wins. Our bullpen has 4. And again, Garrett has 2 saves. Sims has a save. Antone has a save. And Doolittle has a save. I mean, I don't even know what to think right now. I mean, this is downright pitiful. The Reds are 12-13. At one point, they were 6-1, 9-2, and they're now 12-13. The player leading the stolen bases has 8 right now. There's 2 players that have 8. The top 5 each individually have as many or more than the Cincinnati Reds as a team. And as a team, I'm guessing we probably rank last in the stolen bases. And you better believe I'm looking right now because I want to know. It's pitiful. Stolen bases. Oh, no, the Reds are not last place. The Yankees have less at 4, and the Mets have less at 3. And side note, my Braves only have 1 more at 6. The leading team, the Padres, have 33. 33. So people are still stealing bases, just not if you're in Cincinnati, New York, or Atlanta. Or the Angels. Wow. All right, so Sal is looking up the active leaders in home runs. So Pujols has 667. Miguel Cabrera has 489. Nelson Cruz has 424. Robinson Cano, 334. Stanton at 318, Justin Upton at 312, Evan Longoria at 308, Mike Trout at 308, and Joey Votto at 300. Chris Davis is next at 295. So he could break that 300 home run number. Freeman's at 247. Harper's at 238. Machado is at 226. So just some side notes there of other players coming up. All right, let's look at bold predictions for the month of May. And then we will look at the current playoffs, the current standings, and what that means for the potential playoffs if the season ended today. All right, bold predictions for May. I have not read this article yet, so I will preface it with that. So these are not my predictions. These are the predictions found on MajorLeagueBaseball.com. But I like looking at bold predictions. I like hearing about bold predictions. And yes, I will write them down. And so at the end of May, we can come back and say that this article was complete trash or this article was right on cue. All right, the first bold prediction. The Minnesota Twins will storm to the top of the AL Central. So that's possible. So just for side note, in the month of April, they had four games postponed, 2 7-inning doubleheaders, in which they went 0-4, and five games that went into extra innings, in which they went 0-5. In the month of May, they play 11 games against the Rangers, Tigers, and Orioles, which is very promising. They'll get Miguel Sano back. Byron Buxton is doing outstanding right now. Nelson Cruz is still playing at a high level. Alex Kirilloff is their rookie sensation, who's doing really well. And Kenta Maeda, who is struggling, needs to kick it into gear, as they say. Number two, the Jared Kelenic show will begin in Seattle. Jared Kelenic. So they're calling for the prospect, or I'm sorry, they're calling for the promotion of Kelenic to the major leagues. He's played in 21 games above Class A. So I don't know about that one. I think that one might be a little far-fetched. But we'll see. Number three, Francisco Lindor will hit his 200th career double. And Lindor's been struggling. He has not had that great season that everyone thought he would have in New York. He's sitting at 192. So, he needs eight doubles. That's realistic in a month, in 30 days. So, we'll see how it goes. Number four, Bryce Harper will have another huge month. So, he needs to specify. Here's the thing I don't like when people make bold predictions. And yes, I'm giving the quote fingers, even though you can't see me right now. But you can't make a bold prediction and just leave it at so-and-so will have another huge month. What does that mean? Because your definition of a huge month and my definition could be different. So let's read what it says. Harper had a great April with a 1.063 OPS. He's drastically reduced his chase rate this season from 28.3 to 22.5. His barrel rate, for instance, is up 4.7%. And the advanced metrics tell us that as good as his early 2021 numbers are, he's actually hit into a bunch of bad luck. Yeah, so it really doesn't give any expectations of what would make May a huge month. So I don't like this prediction. I think it's way too vague. All right, Dustin May will be the NL Pitcher of the Month. Dustin May. So he has a 98 mile per hour sinker, 98 mile per hour four seam fastball, 93 mile per hour cutter, and a curveball, in which batters have gone 0 for 21. So as of right now, he has an unhittable curveball on top of throwing upper 90s. He has a, let's see, last year he had a 19.6 strikeout rate, finished April with a 37.2 strikeout rate. That is phenomenal. If he keeps that up, yeah, I don't see why he wouldn't be the pitcher of the month in May. Jaiman Choi will homer in his first at-bat of 2021. Now, that is a bold prediction. Because there's a lot that has to go into that. One, he has to be called up. It says here he could join the Rays by the middle of the month. So, I mean, you have to hope that he gets brought up. Or he returns from injury. And then on top of that, his first at-bat calling a home run, that's a bold prediction. That is a bold prediction. Number seven, can you say first place, ... D-backs, first placed Diamondbacks. I cannot. Listen, the NL West is proving to be a very, very competitive division this year, and I love it. You've got right now the Giants are leading. Spoiler alert for my standings. The Giants are leading. You have a division with the Dodgers and the Padres. The Rockies are pretty much the bottom floaters. And out of all those teams, you're telling me the D-backs are who you're predicting to lead the division? Man, that is bold. All right, number eight, George Springer will have a four-homer game. That also is bold. I don't think it happens. Those games are rare. But little side note here, the last six four-homer games in MLB history all took place in the month of May. I was at the game where Scooter Jeanette hit four home runs for the Reds. So, George Springer. Number nine, Joey Votto will bang. What does that mean? That is frustrating because he keeps doing the same thing in this report. So it's saying he's going to go on a homer spree. All right. We'll see. And number 10, Jacob DeGrom will give up four runs in a game and win. That's bold. To give up four earned runs and win the game. So there's your May bold predictions. All right, real quick before we hit the break, let's look at the standings and look at who would go to the playoffs if the season ended right now. So in the American League, I know this, the standings are very close. So in the American League, the Royals have the number one seed. So that makes the fourth week in a row that we've had a different number one seed in the AL. So the Royals, actually, I am sorry, it's not the Royals, it is the Red Sox. They have them by about a half a game. Boston. So Boston is the first repeat because they had it in week two. So Boston and then KC Oakland is the other division game. And the wild card game would be the White Sox and the Mariners. So it's the same five teams as last week, just number one and three are flipped. All right, in the National League, We have a tie. We have the Brewers and the Giants tied for the number one seed. I'm going to give it to the Giants based on the run differential. The number two seed is then Milwaukee. And the three seed is Philly. Now, note, the Phillies are leading their division at 13-13. They have a 500 record. Wild card game. No surprise here, Dodgers Padres. That would be a fun matchup, but I don't want to see that in the wild card game. Just saying. I'd rather see that in the NLCS. All right, so based on this, my team out of the American League, so just as a recap, week one I had the Astros-Dodgers. That was the number one Astros and the number two Dodgers. Week two I had the number five Angels and the number one Dodgers. Week three I had the number three Red Sox and the number one Dodgers. This week, so I've had a different team out of the AL so far every week. But this week I am going to go with the same team I went with last week, and that's Boston. Out of those five teams, I think they're the best, the most capable right now, at this moment. Out of the National League, I'm still going to go with the Dodgers because I think the Giants are a fluke right now. I think the Dodgers hit a rough patch because they've been playing the Padres. Them and the Padres have just been beating each other. And so it has allowed the number three team. So understand this. So here's what is happening in the NL West right now. You have your two top teams in the Dodgers and the Padres. All right. They've played, I think, two series against each other in the last 2 weeks. So they're I'm pretty sure they've come out pretty even in them. So the Dodgers and Padres are over here beating each other, racking up the losses for the other team. So they're going back and forth. Meanwhile, the Giants, who are the number three team in that division, have been able to win against whoever they're facing off against. And because the Dodgers and Padres are beating each other, the Giants have been able to jump them both. So understand that is what is happening in the NL West right now. It's not going to stay that way. The Giants are not going to remain in the number one spot. And I would say probably by next week's podcast, they won't be number one again. There's my bold prediction for May, if you really want to call it a bold prediction. In the NL Central, the teams are going back and forth way too much. The Cubs, the Pirates are pretty much the bottom dwellers. The Reds are kind of back and forth. The Cardinals are a little bit back and forth. The Brewers are starting to do what we expected them to do. In the NL East, the whole division stinks. I expected a four-team race. We're getting a five-team race, but they're all terrible. I look for Atlanta to finally start pulling away there here shortly. AL West, I look for the Astros and Angels to start coming around again a little bit more. AL Central, the Twins hit a rough patch. They've got some injuries. The White Sox got some injuries, but I see them coming around. And in the AL East, I'm surprised Boston has held it together this long. And I'm surprised there's so many losing teams in Major League Baseball. All right, that's going to do it for the first half of this podcast. Stay tuned. After the break, we're going to dive right into the NFL draft. Stay tuned. Stay with me. See you in a minute. And welcome back. We are going to jump right into the NFL draft. So let's look at the first round in comparison to the mock drafts. All right, so I will say this. My first mock draft, I had correct picks. I had five correct picks. Five out of 32. Five. In my final mock draft, I had four, so I did even worse. So in my first mock draft, obviously I had Trevor Lawrence correct, Zach Wilson correct, Trey Lance correct, Devontae Smith, although it wasn't in the right number, he still went to the right team, and then Kwity Paye going to Indy. So that was my five there. In my final mock draft, I had, again, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Devontae Smith, and Gregory Rousseau going to Buffalo. So my mock drafts, not looking so hot. And so this draft has been interesting, in my opinion. It's been odd in some situations, but interesting. So I will say this. There are teams that are that are having outstanding drafts. There really are. I went through here and looked at the original needs that I had marked down, and it doesn't correlate with what ESPN says their draft needs were. So I don't know how accurate it is. But most teams had four or five positions as needs. So Jacksonville has drafted all five of their needs. The Jets have drafted four out of their five. San Fran drafted three of their five. Atlanta, three. Cincinnati, three. Miami, two. Detroit, three. Carolina, two. Denver, three. Dallas, three out of four. The Giants, one. Philly, two. The Chargers, four out of four. Minnesota, three out of four. New England, three. Arizona, two. Las Vegas, four out of five. Washington, four. Chicago, two. Indy, two. Tennessee, three. Pittsburgh, three. Cleveland, three out of four. Baltimore, one out of four. New Orleans, two. Green Bay, four. Buffalo, one. Tampa Bay, one. Seattle, two. The Rams, three. Houston, two. And the Chiefs, three out of four. So that's how many of their team needs they drafted. So let's go through this first round here. And I just want to talk about a few of these. So let's start at number three, really, because that's really where the draft kind of began. I mean, I could even argue four is where the draft really began. Because we knew San Francisco was one and two were predetermined. We knew that. We knew San Francisco at number three was going to take a quarterback. It was just which one were they going to take? Were they going to take Mac Jones? Were they going to take Trey Lance? Were they going to throw everybody off and take Justin Fields? And they went with Trey Lance. At number four, which is, again, really where the draft started, I don't understand what the Falcons were doing. So you have the opportunity now at number four to draft your quarterback of the future, or you have needs at offensive line, cornerback. I mean, I don't know that I would have taken a cornerback there, but I would have taken either a quarterback or an offensive lineman. And they took neither. Instead, they took Kyle Pitts. Now, again, many people are saying Kyle Pitts is the best prospect in the entire draft. I just don't know if at number four you're going best available or you're going for a position you actually need. So we'll see how that one plays out over the years. ESPN grades it as a 94. He was listed as the number two overall rank. Post-draft analysis says Pitts will make the Falcons' passing attack that much more dangerous. Hayden Hurst finished 14th among tight ends in receiving yards last year, and he's not an elite number one. He's an above-average number two, and pairing him with Pitts will make the 12 personnel looks, sets with one back and two tight ends, that new head coach Arthur Smith has run in the past tough to defend. So now, I get it. You now have an offense that obviously you have Matty Ice at quarterback. You've got Julio and Calvin Ridley at wide receiver, and now you've got Hayden Hurst and Kyle Pitts at tight end. I just feel like there's a missed opportunity there. All right, number five. This is one that I had said in both of my mock drafts, and I'm pretty sure I said the last 3 weeks, that I could see going either way. I could see them drafting Penei Sewell, and it made sense. And I could see them drafting Ja'Marr Chase, and it making sense. And they went with the latter and drafted Ja'Marr Chase. I can't fault them for that. I can't. I think Ja'Marr Chase is an outstanding player. I think he will be phenomenal paired up with Joe Burrows. So I don't hate on that draft pick. They gave it a 94 on ESPN. All right, number six, Miami. They needed a playmaker, right? That's what we kept saying. We've been saying the whole time. So they took Jalen Waddle. I applaud him. I think it's a good pick. At number seven, Detroit. They needed a wide receiver. They needed a linebacker. You know, they could have gone Devontae Smith. They could have gone Micah Parsons. He was still available at this point. They could have gone at this point. They could have gone Justin Fields, Mac Jones, either one of the, I mean, they had their pick. Literally, they had their pick. The one position they really didn't have to have is an offensive lineman. And guess what they took? An offensive tackle. Now, I will say one thing I have said on this podcast before, the Lions did rank very high in number of sacks given up last season. So I get it from that aspect, but your team has far bigger needs than an offensive tackle. Especially when you look at the next five picks and you could have had any of those five and it would have been an outstanding pick. At number eight, Carolina. Again, quarterback, linebacker, offensive tackle. They did need cornerback, so I don't disagree with the J.C. Horn pick. I don't. Now, the next pick with Denver makes absolutely no sense. Why in the world do you take Patrick Surtain the second there? Denver signed Ronald Darby and Kyle Fuller. They did allow the second highest completion percentage outside the numbers and had the third fewest picks on passes thrown outside the numbers last year. But again, you added Ronald Darby and Kyle Fuller. Why do you waste the number nine pick in the draft on a position you don't need? That might be the pick in this entire draft that frustrated me the most, because you have far bigger needs than a cornerback. You could have addressed your quarterback issue. Fields and Jones are still both available. You could have grabbed a linebacker. Micah Parsons was still there. But you grabbed a cornerback. I just don't understand what John Elway is thinking out there. Don't get me wrong. Patrick Surtain is going to be an outstanding player. But that is not the right fit for him. So now we get to the point where we see some maneuvering with the NFC East. So the Eagles and the Cowboys make a trade so that way the Eagles can go up and get Devontae Smith. That's one of the ones I picked right, so I can't fault them for that. So then the Bears come knocking and they make a trade with the Giants to take Justin Fields. I applaud the pick. I do. I like the pick. And I'll talk about this again here in a little bit, but the Bears went out and not only did they get Fields, but they got some players to put around him. And I think they did a great job in this draft. All right, so then Dallas is sitting at 12, and they have needs of a cornerback, safety, defensive tackle, and offensive tackle. And they could have taken Rashawn Slater. They could have taken Elijah Vera Tucker. They could have taken several other players. But they took Micah Parsons. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. The Chargers then take Rashawn Slater. Makes sense. Not going to overthink this one. Rashawn Slater now protects Justin Herbert. It makes sense. The Jets then trade up and get Elijah Vera Tucker. So they're getting an offensive guard to protect their brand new quarterback. Makes sense. Moving on. New England, Mac Jones fell right to him. I mean, he was given to them on a silver platter. No debate there. Nothing to worry about. All right, I'm not going to go through all of the rest of these picks, but I will say Miami, again, in their second pick, they reached. Jalen Phillips at defensive end. I don't think that was necessary. I don't think it was needed. I think they could have gone with either of the running backs in that situation and could have been fine. Or Caleb Farley. That would have been a good pick too. So the Giants, let me get this straight. Here's the other frustrating pick. So obviously you heard my rant about Denver. So the Giants had the chance to draft Devontae Smith. Well, no, they didn't have the chance to draft Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith was gone. Eagles jumped up ahead of them. But the Giants, who have Sterling Shepard, Darius Slayton, is that his name? It's Slayton. I don't remember his first name. And Kenny Golladay. Three receivers. They have needs, including an edge, an offensive lineman, and a linebacker. And so they trade out of that number 11 spot, where they could have drafted Micah Parsons. And they trade back, and then they reach. So not only do they trade back, and they could have had Rashad Bateman if they really wanted a wide receiver. Or they could have met one of their other needs that they had. Kwity Paye went the next pick, literally. They could have had him. And they reach on Kadarius Toney, the 32nd ranked player. I just don't get what New York is doing. I mean, on one side, the Jets are doing really well with their draft, and then the Giants are just not making any sense. Other than that, the other frustrating pick comes at number 29 in Green Bay. So you have your quarterback, your Hall of Fame quarterback, come out and say that he is frustrated. He wants out. And instead of helping him, well, one, instead of trading him and getting the draft capital, two, instead of helping him and getting some players that would be great for him to play with, you go out and draft the 71st ranked player in cornerback Eric Stokes. I can't even explain that. I have no words for what you're doing there. Other than I understand why Aaron Rodgers wants out of that place. All right, the last pick I wanted to really discuss came in the second round. So the Cincinnati Bengals. Again, I've said this from day one of this podcast in talking about the Bengals and the NFL draft and free agency and this upcoming season. And I said it not just about the Bengals, but in general. You're only as good as the people that block for you. Your quarterback is only as good as the linemen that are in front of him keeping him upright. Joe Burrow's already has injury issues now. And you need to draft a line. All right? I get the Ja'Marr Chase pick. I do. I understand it. But we get to the second round, and you have no, maybe it's not the second round. No, it's the third round. I'm sorry. You get to the third round. No, there was one they traded out of, I thought. Well, I can't find it now, so I'm not really sure. Oh, there it is. Yeah. So you had the sixth pick in the second draft, in the second round. I'm sorry, the sixth pick in the second round. All right. Tevin Jenkins was still on the board, offensive tackle from Oklahoma State, should have been a first rounder. You had Liam Eichenberg from Notre Dame, offensive tackle, 33rd ranked overall. You had Walker Little, who probably should have been a third rounder, still available. Still available. And you trade out of that spot. All three of those players get drafted. And then you take the 78th overall ranked player at number 46 in Jackson Carmen, Clemson offensive tackle. Post-draft analysis, the Bengals traded down to draft Carmen and got some much-needed help on the offensive line. Carmen played left tackle for the Tigers and will come in and immediately compete for a starting guard spot. That being said, Carmen also gives Cincinnati some position flexibility and could potentially kick out to tackle at some point in his career. Now, I get that he's a good player. I get it. I do. I get that he's a hometown guy. He's from Fairfield. Fairfield, Ohio, 30 minutes from downtown Cincinnati. But you passed and throw Landon Dickerson in there, really. Because you're not picking up the fifth-year option on Billy Price. So you pass on Landon Dickerson, 45th overall ranked player. Tevin Jenkins, who is going to be an outstanding lineman, who by the way, is now going to be blocking for Justin Fields in Chicago. And you pass on Liam Eichenberg, who's going to be now protecting Tua in Miami. And you passed on Walker Little, who's now going to be blocking for Sunshine, Trevor Lawrence. I don't understand the mentality there. I don't get it. I don't understand it. It makes no sense to me. What are the Bengals doing? Yeah, they answered they filled a need in their offensive line, but why would you trade out of that position and have the opportunity to draft three other players that are far better, far superior than Justin Carmen? So then we get to the third round and you draft a defensive end. You still have offensive line needs. You passed on Brady Christensen from BYU, who he's way overrated. Carolina way overreached on him. What else do you have needs of? A tight end and a defensive tackle. I'm not terribly upset with the second round pick, but Wyatt Davis was still there. Offensive guard from the Buckeyes. I don't get the thought process with the Bengals. All right, let's look at some historical facts, and then let's look at some fun facts before we end this. So historical facts. Actually, let's look at the fun facts first. Jacksonville, this is their 30th first-round pick in history. 20 of them have been in the top 10. Including this year, 13 of their last 14 first-round picks have been in the top 10. The New York Jets, since 2015, 5 of their 7 first-round picks have been in the top 10. This is the third time in 4 years they're picking in the top 3. San Francisco, in the modern era, the 49ers have only drafted 2 quarterbacks in the first round, Jim Druckenmiller in 1992 and Alex Smith in 2005. In the previous 4 drafts, they picked twice in the top 3, Solomon Thomas and Nick Bosa. The Falcons will pick in the top 10 back-to-back years for the first time since 2014-2015 when they drafted Jake Matthews and Vic Beasley. Last time they picked... top 5 was when they drafted Matt Ryan in 2008. So the last time they picked in the top 5, they picked a quarterback. And this year they had the opportunity to pick his successor and didn't. All right, the Bengals, 4 straight first-round picks and 5 of 6 have been offensive players. This includes 3 offensive linemen in Jonah Williams, Billy Price, and Cedric Ogbuehi. The Dolphins, 6 of their last 9 first-round picks played college football in the SEC. And they take Jalen Waddle. I believe they took Jalen Waddle. So that makes 7 of their last 10. Detroit, 3rd straight top 10 pick. They took Jeffrey Okuda last year and TJ Hawkinson the year before that. Carolina, since 2012, 6 of the Panthers' last 9 first-round picks have been defensive linemen or linebackers. But they took a cornerback this year, so. Denver has drafted in the top 10 just 8 times in franchise history, and this is only the 4th time since 1990 and 3rd time since 2010. Dallas, since 2007, 9 of their 13 first-round picks and 5 of their last 7 have made at least 1 Pro Bowl. And they grabbed Michael Parsons this year. I could definitely see that being another one. The Giants, between 2012 and 2020, 7 of their last 10 first-rounders were on the offensive side of the ball. And they took a wide receiver this year, so 8 of the last 11. Philly has picked in the number... Philly has picked number 12 just 1 other time in 2012 when they drafted 6-time Pro Bowl Fletcher Cox. Let's see. Let's skip down to the Patriots. Between 2007 and 2012, 5 of the first 6 first-rounders made a Pro Bowl, while none of the last 5 first-round picks have made 1. The Jets in 2016 was the last player that they drafted in the first round with a pick in the 20s. Only once since 2012, Jets have picked in the 20s. The Saints have picked number 28 1 other time, and it was 10 years ago when they drafted Mark Ingram. Houston Texans, 2021 is the third time in 4 years that they do not have a first-round pick. Kansas City Chiefs have had only two picks since 2016 in the first round. The Rams, barring a trade, their next first-round pick will be in 2023. It's a little fun fact there. 2016, they drafted Jared Goff number one. 2017, they traded to the Titans as part of their Goff package. 2018, they traded to the Patriots for Brandon Cooks. 2019, they traded to the Falcons during the draft for additional picks. 2020, they traded to the Jaguars for Jalen Ramsey. 2021, they also traded to the Jaguars for Jalen Ramsey. 2022, they traded to the Lions for Matthew Stafford. So those are your fun facts for the draft. Let's look at the historical recap real quick. The Jaguars, with the first pick, took Trevor Lawrence. The fourth time in franchise history they drafted a quarterback in the first round. So previous, Byron Leftwich, Blaine Gabbert, and Blake Bortles. So not a lot to live up for or live up to there. The Bengals drafted Ja'Marr Chase, number five. It's the third time in 10 years they drafted a wide receiver in the top 10. And the second time since 2017. So they took A.J. Green in 2011 and John Ross in 2017. After picking twice in the first round, Miami has drafted an SEC player with seven of their last 11 first-round picks. In the last 5 years, Arizona has only drafted two positions, linebacker and quarterback, in the first round. Linebackers have been drafted back-to-back with Zaven Collins and Isaiah Simmons, plus Hassan Reddick in 2017. At quarterback, they drafted Kyler Murray in 2019 and Josh Rosen in 2018. At number 24, the Steelers drafted Najee Harris. This is the first time since 2012 when the Steelers drafted offensive guard David DeCastro that they drafted an offensive player. The last seven first-rounders, all defense. Now, fun note here for the Steelers. The last time they drafted a – there's a little bit of trivia for you. The last time the Steelers drafted a running back in the first round, and I don't know if you know this, but it was Rashard Mendenhall from Illinois. I believe 2007, if I'm not mistaken, it was 2007. So that's a little trivia fact for you. Since 2000 and coming into Thursday, four teams had not drafted a quarterback in the first round. That list is now cut to three teams as the Patriots drafted Mac Jones. It's the second time in franchise history the Pats own the number 15 pick, and both times they have now drafted a quarterback. Last time was in 1983, they drafted Tony Eason. Green Bay drafted Eric Stokes, which I've already talked about. Nine of their last 10 first-round picks have been on the defensive side of the ball. And the one that wasn't was quarterback Jordan Love. And you wonder why your franchise quarterback, your Hall of Fame quarterback, is upset. A little fun note here, there were four college reunions that took place on Thursday. Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne, both drafted by the Jaguars out of Clemson. Ja'Marr Chase, drafted by the Bengals, will reunite with his quarterback Joe Burrow. And they also have tight end Thaddeus Moss under contract as well. The Dolphins drafted Jalen Waddle, who gets to meet back up with his quarterback Tua in Miami. And the Eagles moving up to draft Devontae Smith. He now reunites with Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia. So that is your draft recap for this year. Again, the draft isn't quite over yet. But that's the big things to talk about. There really weren't big names that fell. I would say Micah Parsons maybe, but he still got drafted at 12. Mac Jones made it all the way to 15. But out of the big names, everybody went pretty much as expected. So we'll see what happens this year. But thank you for listening. Tune in next week. Don't forget to check out Instagram, Rounding Third Sports. See you later.